Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, and alongside me, as always, is the Ginger Prince of Baseball, Bob Finkbeiner.
How are you?
And behind the glasses, our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
And we're joined by our newest staff member at Tri-State Baseball, Dr. Garrett Britton.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
So on today's show, we're going to have Dr. Garrett give us some medical updates on what's happening with some players who are injured on each of our respective clubs. We're going to run down, give you spring training updates for each of our clubs, have our pop-up culture segment with Harvey Dorfman's Mental Game of Baseball, a fantastic book if you haven't read it. And we will finish up with emails, tweets, and other people who have contacted us with some questions
and comments.
Tweet mails, yeah. We're still waiting for a good name for that segment. Right now we're going with tweet mail, so...
Tweet mail on the interweb.
Tweet mails on the interweb.
Driving the Google.
Oh, boy.
So before we get started today, though, did anyone see the NAFTA collapse the other night when Mexico and Canada had a little disagreement about some baseball etiquette in that tournament?
Trading proper etiquette of how to hit players.
Yeah, that's... it was interesting to see because, you know, and I didn't realize this ahead of time, but apparently there's some rules... in the tournament that are involved with advancing that apply to runs scored.
If there's a tie.
Yeah, if there's a tie. It's based on runs scored versus runs
right.
against. And so Team Canada wanted to make sure that they were extracting every run that they could.
Right. So the bunt down the third baseline from the catcher for the base hit late in the game, they took offense to that.
And I don't want to say it's like Cuban Missile Crisis tense, but...
But they are staying at the same hotel.
Yeah, that breakfast buffet is going to be awkward.
Yeah.
I bet it was really awkward this morning.
Breakfast buffet line with the Maricopa County Sheriff's Department.
they're bringing in the irons.
That's right.
What else was interesting was the melee basically is subsided. I think it's the pitching coach goes back to the dugout and gets hit in the forehead by, I don't know, a cup, something from the fans. But if you notice, just to his left, one of the players fires back something else to the crowd.
Yep.
So it's like, fans, beware. When you throw things,
at a baseball
players
player.
Will throw things back.
Yeah. It's turning into a soccer match on that field.
Is there a doctor in the house?
I'm not a doctor yet, but I play one on the internet.
All right, well, let's kick it off with Dr. Garrett and his medical updates for our players.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for having me as the latest addition to Tri-State of Mind Baseball. Big news this week is out of Cleveland. All eyes on Chris Perez, who sustained a right shoulder injury 2 weeks ago. Some initial imaging showed a right subscapularis injury. Now, the problem with this is the subscapularis is actually one of the muscles in the rotator cuff group. So this could be potentially devastating.
Rotator cuff, that sounds like throwing.
It completely is. This is key to his livelihood. And the problem with diagnosing strains is that first-degree strain is just an actual stretching of the muscle.
Okay.
A second-degree strain involves a partial tear of the muscle, and a third-degree is a complete tear.
Okay.
So
obviously we're shooting for first.
We want Perez back. That would be nice. And it's hard to tell the difference between a second, if it's mild, and a first. So he wants to do everything he can to follow the physical therapist guidelines and rest that shoulder, because if this is a second degree that could advance to a third degree, he could be in big trouble.
Well, that's good, because Chris Perez likes to follow people's advice.
I don't see him resting very much.
Now, is this something that can it heal itself throughout the course of the season if he is going out there and throwing and putting pressure on his arm like that? Is that something that'll heal on its own
while
he's playing?
If he rests it and he doesn't push it, you know, and we see his tendencies. if it's a second degree and he keeps pushing it, he's going to be in trouble. But if it's a first degree strain and, you know, he's not out there, you know, whipping him, he's going to be all right.
Yeah. Well, he's supposed to, I believe, begin his return to throwing program today.
Yes.
And when the media asked him, "How's your shoulder feel?" I'm going to assume gruffly, because pretty much everything Chris Perez says is gruffly, said, "I don't know. I won't know until I throw. It only hurts when I throw."
Well, and the statement was that he was not going to return to a throwing program until he was completely asymptomatic.
Right.
So, and he decided to sit out the World Baseball Classic himself.
Right.
It wasn't the trainers, so we're being told. So, you know, hopefully he's confident you know,
that it's something minor
in his shoulder, yeah,
and that he can get it straightened out here before opening day. Okay. Continue with the Indians triage list here. We're kind of racking up some injuries.
So then on to Frank Hermann. Two words. Tommy John.
Yeah, I think he's trying to avoid that conclusion. I think he's going to his third doctor visit this week.
Yeah, the most recent round of testing has come back inconclusive.
Probably might want to err on the side of Tommy John in this case.
Yeah, it's looking that way.
The Hermann.
Yeah, so he injured his elbow on the 25th, that game against Oakland, and you know, they've been trying to rest it, hoping it's just some inflammatory changes in the elbow, but
I think he's been to Lewis Yoakum, which is a big surgeon that specializes in that kind of surgery.
Right.
I think he visited the Angels trainer when they were out in,
yep,
because they're out
California.
West. And then I think this week he's flying to New York to visit
for another assessment.
The Mets doctor.
Dr. Altcheck, I think is his name. It might be Jason Altcheck, but he's going for a third opinion. Okay, so the Herminator is left up in the air, but yeah, it's looking more and more like Tommy John, I think.
So keeping on track with the Tommy John, we have three guys. Josh Tomlin, who went under the Tommy John 5 months ago, and they're expecting him to miss 2013
right.
season.
Yeah.
And then Blake Wood, who had it 8 months ago, is out until probably early June.
Right.
Maybe later.
Blake Wood's a guy they got on a non-roster invite, kind of a wild card because he's hurt. Snuck him onto the disabled list.
He was, wasn't he a top prospect in someone else's system before he came to Cleveland? Was he?
I know he was a very pretty effective reliever for the Royals out of their bullpen. I'm not sure of his prospect status coming up, but I know he was very effective.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of a small guy, I think, but he throws pretty hard.
And then from Pittsburgh, Charlie Morton there expected to have live batting practice on Monday.
That's good. That's real good.
he's thrown four bullpen sessions and looking for a return in mid-June.
Now, with the rest of Pittsburgh's injuries, I know, you know, Charlie Morton was obviously a major one last year where we lost him to the knife, but with the rest of guys so far this spring that are reporting injuries, it doesn't seem like any of them are the serious type of injuries that send up the red flags where you're panicked.
Right, not really. A lot of it, there's Jeff Karstens with the biceps tendonitis, and really all that is like an inflammation of the biceps tendon. Not very serious, some rest. You know, that's a pretty robust muscle group and not easily damaged.
Yeah.
Like we see with those rotator cuff injuries. And then there's old Francisco Liriano. What a story this is, huh?
If you're not familiar with the Francisco Liriano injury, it was initially reported that Liriano hurt himself slipping in the bathroom over Christmas. And he hurt his non-throwing arm, which, yeah, that's a pretty let's like Sammy Sosa sneezing and throwing out his back kind of injury.
Clint Barmas falling down the stairs.
Falling down the stairs carrying
deer meat.
So then Liriano gets to the... Yeah, deer meat. So Liriano gets to the States, and when he gets to the States, someone asked him about his injury and slipping in the bathroom, and he says, I don't know where people are getting this story. I was pounding on my kid's door while they were playing with their Christmas presents, and that's how I hurt my arm. Like, oh, jeez.
Oh, that's better.
Yeah, I would have just gone with the bathroom story.
Yeah, just stick with the one embarrassment instead of having two different embarrassing stories floating around.
Fortunately, it's his non-throwing arm, and he's looking for a return shortly.
Mm, he's already been out throwing and playing.
Well, will be interesting, though, because although obviously the seriousness is much, much less when it's your non-throwing arm, you know, Justin Masterson really, I think, struggled last year because of the injury to his non-throwing shoulder and the surgery he had to clean it up. It just throws off everything.
It does.
It's such a finely tuned rhythm.
People say all the time, oh, it's his non-throwing arm, he'll be fine. If you've ever thrown a baseball, you realize how much you do with your non-throwing arm when you're yanking it down towards your side and all that. So
although, you know, I think the long-term outlook is pretty rosy, because it's not going to affect him in a long-term kind of way. You know, not to say there won't be any effect of that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Russell Martin there in Pittsburgh started off as like some back soreness, and now they're kind of leaning
old man
towards,
soreness.
Yeah. towards maybe a possible shoulder injury. Not a whole lot being said yet about that, but we'll follow it.
I know, he just played the other day. I think he went maybe 1-for-4 as DH, and he's supposed to be seeing some catching action coming up soon. So
I was going to say, that injury might be helped by some less time with the tools of ignorance behind the plate. Mm-hmm. Might clear that up a little.
Yeah.
You know, veteran catcher, spring training's got about a month to go. Oh, man, my back. I feel like it's kind of bothering me. May I get DH for a while?
And then over to Detroit, we have Brennan Bosch, who returned on Tuesday, I think it was. He was out with an oblique injury. And oblique injuries are interesting because they don't actually, it's not an actual structural deficit. You know, it doesn't really impair how the body works. It's more of a pain, a nuisance, a functional deficit.
That's an interesting injury because we've seen guys in the past several seasons where they have a slightly tweaked oblique and are back within 7 days. We've seen guys that have been gone for 2 months too.
Right. It's real subjective. You know, a lot of it is pain and how much the guys can tolerate. And then Quentin Berry there, who was out with patellar tendonitis in late February. They're expecting to clear him today. I don't know if anything's been said about that.
I haven't seen anything.
I haven't read anything
about
it yet today either.
Yeah, they're thinking about clearing him today. And the patellar tendonitis is real similar to the biceps tendonitis. You know, it's just an inflammatory change, not a very serious injury with long-term effects.
And Barry and Bosch, they're right in this outfield competition, right?
They're about 207 guys competing for that last outfield spot on the Tigers organization. So, yeah. A guy like Barry, you have to be careful, obviously, because part of his attributes is his speed that he brings to the table.
Mm-hmm.
Quentin Berry's a guy really that surprised me last year. You know, I saw him a lot playing against the Indians. He comes up and you're kind of like, who is this guy?
Yep.
He just keeps getting on base, little slap hits, making you miserable out there on the base paths. For long, you're like, oh, Quentin Berry, come on.
Scrappy.
You're killing me, Quentin Berry.
Scrappy little Quentin Berry. Well, thanks for those medical updates, Dr. Garrett. We look forward to working with you throughout this season. That was fantastic. It's nice to have someone who knows something about what we're talking about. He has very valuable information, so it's good to have him around to kind of fill us in on what's happening so we're just not full of conjecture and saying things that fans typically say. Now we actually have a legitimate resource to go to.
Oh, man.
So let's transition into what's going on in Detroit's camp, speaking of Quentin Berry. And Bob, what's going on over there?
We have three major stories to discuss briefly here. The update on the fifth spot in rotation between Rick Porcello and Drew Smalley is going, I guess, for team-wise, very well, because both the guys are pitching strong. Smalley has thrown 9 innings so far today. He's only allowed 3 hits, that's it, with 6 strikeouts. Porcello's gone 8 innings, pitched very well, no walks, 10 Ks, and according to MLB.com, has thrown 50 of 56 pitches for strikes.
Wow.
89%. Now, obviously, the opposition he's facing isn't everyday major league hitters, but still to fine-tune those things with his control and command, it's got to be very, you know, pleasing.
That's
for
amazing
the staff
to see. Yeah, and kind of piggybacking off that, if you're throwing 89% of your pitches for strikes to major league hitters, I think you're going to see a lot more of your pitches being hit outside of the park. But, you know, for spring training, as far as just, you know, seeing command and control, right. I mean, he's sharp this spring.
And it's nice to see his K rate is looking very promising, too. That's one part of his, you know, pitching game so far that seems to be on a slow incline. So hopefully he can become a little bit more of that strikeout artist, join Verlander and Max Scherzer and Anibal Sanchez in the roster.
Yeah, that could be quite a strikeout staff there if Porcello gets wound up. And he certainly has the stuff when he harnesses it to be a strikeout pitcher.
And he came out, we mentioned this earlier in the year, that he was going to work on throwing a slider.
Right.
He has since said that the slider, he is scrapping that for now.
Oh,
he's working on the curveball, fastball, changeup repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
Of also other news, everyone's, I guess, favorite closing candidate, frustrating Bruce Rondon, he made their appearance much better than the previous outings he's had after having a bullpen session with pitching coach Jeff Jones. They found, according to Jones, that he has been a little bit more upright this so far this spring compared to the past. They went back last year, looked at a lot of video, worked on his mechanics. He came out hitting 100 miles an hour 3 different times. He threw every pitch but one, a fastball. He did allow 2 hits, but one, according to reports, was just a little bloop single. So we'll see how that goes. Manager Leland was on CBS Sports in the morning here, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, discussing the closing options in Detroit. Pretty much on no uncertain terms, we're not going to see Jose Valverde coming back to Detroit anytime soon.
Yeah, they made that
soon.
Pretty clear.
Yeah.
That was bad for his blood pressure last season.
Yeah.
Yes. They also made it clear that he seems to think that if Rondon does not pan out as a possible closer, they're going to approach it with a committee approach.
So now do you think, I know he said that, but do you think that's manager speak right now, and that if Rondon doesn't pan out, they're going to go out and get someone? Or you really think they're going to go with, you know, oh, we'll use Phil Koch a little, we'll use, you know, whoever a little, we'll spread it around?
I honestly believe with what they have in the bullpen, they could do a committee approach very easily.
Yeah.
They have guys that have high K rates.
Albuquerque,
yeah. Benoit has a little bit of experience with that role.
Yeah.
They can fill that gap. It's going to be very hard to acquire, I think, a closer at this point in the year right now.
Yeah. I thought for sure this offseason that they would be going after Rafael Soriano. I thought he would be a perfect fit for that team that had that erratic end to games last season with Valverde. I thought Soriano would be a fantastic fit there. I was shocked when he didn't
end up
there.
Well, you know, and then there's a lot of like overpriced aging veteran closers out there that I'm just shocked they didn't go after. Like I'm shocked they didn't go out and get like Brian Wilson.
Right.
You know, because that's the kind of guy the Tigers like to sign.
What about Tribe favorite Chris Perez? What are his chances of possibly ending up in Detroit?
Well, you know, actually, I saw the other day, I think it was Paul Hoynes, it was someone from the Plain Dealer reporting on that, because I guess there's some rumors going around that Porcello's the trade bait from the Tigers to try to get a closer. And the Plain Dealer made it explicit to not quote Chris Antonetti, but it seemed like it was coming from somewhere. And it was a very, very solid statement that we will not trade with the Tigers during the season. If the Tigers want to talk, we'll talk in the off season, but we're not going to trade right now. So, I mean, Vinny Pesano, you know, he's looked really good in the World Baseball Classic. He's looked like the closer of the future, but I don't see them doing that right now. I think they like the chemistry they have, and they just want to ride this season out and see what happens.
And then finally, the last thing to mention at the Detroit Tigers camp is that battle for that outfield spot. Jeff Cabernas, we've been tracking him this spring. He continues to play more and more in the outfield, a little bit of second base. He's hit right around 300. And a couple of things in his favor. Obviously, he has plus speed. He's shown that he can be very versatile playing anywhere that he's been assigned to, outfield, second base, DH. And he bats right-handed, which is a plus for the Tigers.
And wasn't he, we discussed this earlier, was he the
Rule 5? Yep.
So he has to be on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they work out a trade.
Right.
Who'd they get him from?
Washington Nationals.
So, yeah, they'd have to work something out with the Nationals or give him back if he's not on the 25-man roster.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Well, let's take a look at Pittsburgh Pirates spring training. Right now, the rotation battle between Jeff Locke and Kyle MacPherson seems to be a little lopsided towards the player that I didn't think was going to make it. If you're just looking statistically at Jeff Locke right now this spring statistically looks a lot better than Kyle MacPherson, although I will say after watching a few of MacPherson's starts, he's been starting out games really well, and he's been strong through the first two innings, and then typically it's the second time that he's been going through a lineup where he's been getting most of his damage done. So if you look at his spring training numbers, MacPherson doesn't look as strong as Jeff Locke, but I still think Kyle MacPherson, I mean, personally, just between watching the two pitchers and knowing what they have with their skill sets, I think MacPherson will still end up being in that fifth starter spot to start off the year. Garrett Cole and Jameson Taillon. These two guys are like those toys that you get on Christmas where you just want to rip them open and just throw them out there and let's see what they can do. Cole sat down the first six batters that he faced against Spain. I believe Pittsburgh won that game. I can't remember what the score was. It was kind of a lopsided score. I was surprised to see it. But he sat down his first six batters, worked his way out of a jam in the third. He looked really solid against Spain. And Taillon will actually be throwing today, I believe, at 4 o'clock.
That's right. For
Team Canada, not Team USA.
Yeah.
He'll be throwing.
Team USA and Team Canada. Taillon will be on Team Canada.
He'll be throwing against Team USA. So I'll be interested to watch him today just to kind of see. Like I said, it's like getting that shiny new toy. You just want to see what it can do. And it looks like so far in this tournament, everyone who's playing in the World Baseball Classic is really not holding back, much to their manager's chagrin, I'm sure. So he'll be a lot of fun to watch out there. Our outfield battle, we have an outfield battle between Travis Snyder and Jose Tabata. At the beginning of the season, or of spring training, I really didn't think it would be much of a battle at all. I'd kind of almost given up on Jose Tabata after watching him last year. I thought for sure that was the end of it once he was in Hurdle's doghouse.
He sort of has the same love and support that you gave Alvarez.
Yeah, he has the Fatty McFat syndrome, where he kind of looked a little rotund last season, kind of shuffling around the outfield. But he came into spring training, and you heard that positive talk that everybody, oh, he's coming into camp in great shape. Actually watching him play, I mean, he does look faster. He looks more focused. He's got a rocket for an arm to begin with. But, you know, his spring training stats have really backed up. He's hitting .333 this spring over 20 plate appearances. He's got an OPS over 1,000. I mean, he's had a really solid spring. And that's not to say Travis Snyder hasn't, but Jose Tabata looks like a man who didn't enjoy his time on the bus in Indianapolis last year, and he wants to get back with the big club. Yeah. So that'll be something else to kind of keep an eye on. You know, Snyder and Tabata will both probably be on the active roster, but as far as who gets the majority,
okay, that's what I was going to ask. Yeah, so they're fighting for a starting job.
They're fighting for a starting spot.
Yeah.
And management and Hurdle had both made it kind of sound like they're comfortable with everybody that they're going to be running out there. But if you want to get the bear share of the playing time, you know, you're going to have to show that you have something that these other players don't have. So we have, and speaking of that, also we have Gabby Sanchez, who has been talked a lot as being a potential platoon mate for Garrett Jones against difficult lefties. Sanchez,
there was a time, I'm just going to interrupt, where people were legitimately talking about the Indians trading Chris Perez for Gabby Sanchez.
Oh, his after.
Boy, am I glad they didn't do that. Holy cow.
His 2000, let me pull it up. His 2011
season. The thing is, it
season,
wasn't crazy.
No, it wasn't.
At the time, it was like, oh yeah, that'd be a great trade. Let's do it.
His 2010 and his 2011 season were both really solid seasons. He had Rookie of the Year votes in 2010. He hit 19 home runs, drove in 85. He did the same thing. He hit 19 home runs again in 2011. He was an all-star. And then, yeah, last year the wheels fell off. And I know he was shipped down to the minors for a period of time last year.
Yeah, he was.
Pittsburgh kind of seems like one of those places now where we're bringing in your trash and we're going to see what we can do with it. Can we rejuvenate it?
That's the Indians' old approach, you know?
Right.
Let's throw it all up against the wall and let's see what sticks. If we have 100 lottery tickets, hey, one of them's going to win, right?
Exactly. Well, when you hear a lot of guys talk about metrics in baseball and how you know, these metrics, they show what a player can do and that's it. But sometimes you get a guy like AJ Burnett who, when people are riding him so hard in New York in the media, and then he has to go pitch in front of fans in New York City that are booing him, and then he has to go on the road and hear fans boo him because he's a New York Yankees pitcher. Right. That's hard mentally to deal with. And Burnett has said it was difficult for him. And Pittsburgh is a much better fit. No one's going to boo you in Pittsburgh if you pitch badly. We've been watching people pitch badly for 20 years. That's nothing new to us. We don't care. We're going to clap when you pitch well, though.
Yeah, he's a pirate. Look at him. He just walked another one.
And he gave an interview the other day where he was talking to someone and he said it was a game he didn't think he'd pitch particularly well. I think he'd thrown 5 innings. He'd given up a couple runs, a couple hits. And when he came off the field, the Pirates fans, we gave him a standing ovation.
Yeah.
And he's walking off the field frustrated with himself, and we're clapping like, yes, yes, you kept us in the game. Thank you, AJ.
Yeah, quality start. All right.
So, you know, and I think you're starting to see that with a lot of guys the Pirates are bringing in. Hey, you can come to Pittsburgh. Clint Hurdle's a great manager to play for as far as being a player's manager. I don't care about his strategy on the field, what you have to say about that, right. But players respond to Hurdle.
It's a beautiful ballpark.
It is.
It is, yeah.
My favorite ballpark that I've been to in America. Love it.
And Pittsburgh's really rejuvenating as a city. You know? So they've got that in their favor, too. It's a nice place to try to lure people in, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. If you like hipsters, Pittsburgh is the place to be. So that's pretty much it out of Pittsburgh. We have Gabby Sanchez, who's, you know, if he could get back to that 2011 form where he could be a 20 home run caliber player.
Might be a big if.
I was going to let him go. You know,
I know.
Listen, he's clearly got the underlying skills to do it. I mean, he's had two consecutive seasons
if
over.
If you've done it, you can do it again.
Exactly.
But he's also done other things.
It's true. Right. He did last season. So we'll have to see. We'll have to see. So let's move on to the Tribe spring training and see what's going on over there.
Well, speaking of people who've done it before and we're hoping they can do it again, there's a lot of talk this week about Jason Giambi making the opening day roster.
Oh, man.
As a coach or a player?
As a player.
As a player.
Terry Francona if you read what is reported in the Plain Dealer or the Akron Beacon Journal or even how they quote him on the Indians website, he basically is talking about him like he's already made the team. I mean, he's really praising him. He does then throw in a few qualifiers usually at the end, you know, about how like, but you know, it would, it hurt our flexibility and, you know, there's a lot of options we got to work through. And then he throws in the obligatory, you know, I don't think Zeke Carrera would make it through waivers. So we got to think about that. And so he throws on about five qualifiers eventually, but he's always praising him for his leadership and, you know, what he can bring in the clubhouse to the younger guys.
Maybe they should go ahead and just hire him as a coach then.
Well, you know, and there was a time when he got signed. When he initially got signed, it made sense as a lottery ticket. Then when they brought Bourne in, it made less sense.
Right.
You know, because it really complicated the flexibility and the spots on the roster. So there was a time when people were saying that maybe this was more like an audition for Giambi as a coach within the Indians organization. I don't know if there's any truth to that. I do know that he's batting 167. He's 3-for-18. He's got 3 doubles and a home run, 3 RBIs. He's got 3 Ks and 4 walks. I mean, so...
And he's 42 years old.
And he's 42 years old, and he can only barely play first, maybe, sort of. So I have an article that I'm working on right now. It should be up either today or in the next couple days about how, if Giambi makes the team, how that reflects out on the rest of the roster. They have a really flexible roster, so I think they have the kind of group that you can bring a guy like Jason Giambi along with, because you've got Avilas and Rayburn's probably going to make the team, and both of them can play every infield position pretty much and almost every outfield except for center field, and they've got a bunch of center fielders, so that's not a problem.
I guess the thing I'm curious about is there really no one else in camp that has a better skill set or brings something else to the table that's better than Jason Giambi?
Well, and you know, and that's the point, I guess, and that's why people like Bob and me to a certain extent kind of go, ugh, when we think about Jason Giambi making the roster. I mean, personally, I like Yan Gomes. I think he'd be a great fit, another flexible player. I see the reason, though, that you want to send him to AAA so he can work on his catching. You know, maybe you don't want to bury him on the bench. Mike McDade's had a really good spring. Mm-hmm. Maybe you want to bring Mike McDade along. He can play corners, infield, and outfield. You know, McDade has an OPS over 1 this spring. Gomes has a 1.2 OPS this spring. He made an error the other day catching, but you know, Terry Francona just kind of brushed it off, saying, well, that's why we're in spring training, so he can learn those kind of things, because he's not been a catcher his whole career. So we'll see what happens. Rayburn's still batting 500. I really don't see how he's not going to make the team.
He is en fuego.
He is. And, you know, the more you look at his career stats, he's a career 267 hitter. Last year becomes more and more of an aberration the more you look at his stats. And I just don't see how he can't make the team. And I think if they want to keep Giambi, they need a guy like Rayburn that can play a bunch of different positions. And he's not going to stunt anyone's development, you know, like if you were to bring up a Gomes or a McDade, where maybe you could get more out of them in the future.
What about their Rule 5 draftee, McGinnis?
I think he's batting like in the 100s. I mean, I don't think he ever really had a good shot to make this team. It was kind of the lottery ticket mm-hmm. idea. Then when they signed Bourne, Giambi, you know, things got stacked against him. I think maybe they might try to work out a trade. Maybe send, I think he came from Texas.
Yes, he did.
Send Texas a reliever. They have tons of relievers down in the minor league system. They have more than can fit in their bullpen, you know, so maybe they'll send a minor league arm over there and stash him down in Double A or Triple A. Probably Double A, because I think McDade would probably go to Triple A, but I don't think he's going to make the team. I think that was pretty much set in stone once they started filling out the roster with some free agents. Stubbs, just a note, he hit a home run, a double, and scored a run in the game that was rained out the other day. And Terry Francona said that he just looked amazing out there. He was fun to watch. His swing looked beautiful. When you look at his stats this spring, he won't get credit for any of those because it was a rain out. So just, you know, something to keep in mind when you look at his like 170 something average, that he lost 6 bases from his OPS in that game.
Just to add to that, though, Francona also was quoted as saying, it was worth the those little innings just for those two swings for Stubbs.
Yeah, he said it was worth it to go out there, even though the game was rained out, to watch Stubbs for those two swings. If you look at the pitching, Terry Francona said that this week he's going to have to start making some decisions on some of these pitchers because he's running out of innings. You know, it's getting to the point where there's less innings available. Guys need to pitch 4 or 5 innings to work up to be a starter. So I would look for David Huff, who's kind of in the limbo right now between starter and reliever. I think they're going to tell him, listen, David, if you're going to make this team, you're going to make it as a reliever. So forget about starting. You're going to get one inning now. He really hasn't had a bang-up spring. He's pitched 10 innings, given up 3 home runs, and has like a 5 ERA. Just real quick to run through the other guys. Bowers looked very good. He's pitched 7 innings at a 2 ERA, 5 Ks, and 1 walk. Tito said, he was making a comment about how, however Bauer looks in April, that's not going to be the finished product. Like, we expect Trevor Bauer to continue to develop and become better and better. But then he said, that doesn't mean he's not going to make this team. So he's leaving that open, but Fink was telling me before we started recording that if they can keep him in the minors till May,
I believe it was late May, I believe,
they extend their control of Trevor Bauer to 2019.
Yes.
So, I mean, I really just don't think he's going to make the team, especially the way Kazmir's pitching. I think they're going to give Kazmir the first crack at this and see if he can keep this going till May. Then I think they're going to have some more hope. The first month is kind of just a lottery ticket to see what he can do. Kazmir was not happy with his slider at all, so he actually asked to pitch in a B game this week because he said, I know I won't work on my slider if it's getting hit in the game, so let me go down to a minor league game. He claims that it's all ironed out, so we'll see the next time he pitches how his slider looks. Dice K's not pitching very well. He doesn't look like the old Dice K. He's been getting out of a lot of jams, put it this way, which Terry Francona claims is the Dice K way. He always gets in jams. He always gets out of them. He says that like it's a compliment. You know, I don't know. It's like the old Bob Wickman, like, load the bases and then one strikeout and a double play. Boom, yeah. Save, done.
That sounds like a Dukes of Hazzard episode. Tune in today to watch Dice K get himself in a real jam and then work his way out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's really a compliment. Like, I mean, I guess if he gets out of it, but, you know, who wants to watch that tightrope act all season? So, Carrasco has looked pretty rough. He got hit in the head by a comebacker, and he hasn't looked very good since then. And the other thing, and I thought he was going to be the leader of getting that last rotation spot coming out of spring. The other thing to keep in mind with Carrasco is he still owes a 6-game suspension for hitting Billy Butler in the head like a year and a half ago because he got Tommy John surgery like the next week. Yeah, so he's never served that suspension. The Indians contacted MLB about it, and they're like, yes, he still has a 6-game suspension.
thought maybe that'd get lost in the paperwork shuffle.
Never mind, we asked. So the only thing, I guess, about that is that makes it pretty hard to be called up, you know, for a spot start or to take someone's place in the rotation because, like, you call him up, you have to call him up at a time where then you can go 6 days without using your call-up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why there was some people that were kind of coming up with this theory of like, oh, you start with Carrasco and then you can carry that extra player, the extra pitcher the first week because you don't need as many bench subs. And so then you let Carrasco serve the suspension and then you send him down to the minor. I don't know if this is just crazy talking or, you
listen,
know.
It's the American League. None of that matters. You just carry whoever you want.
I mean, I don't know what their plan is, but that is kind of hanging over Carrasco's head. Jerry Gills looked kind of crazy in camp. He's a converted shortstop. He has kind of a high ERA because he gave up a few runs the other day, but his batting average against is under 100.
Oh, wow.
They've been very impressed with him so far.
Yeah. Now, they have a really crowded bullpen, so I don't know what that means because I don't think he can fit into the bullpen, but something interesting that's going on. The only other thing I wanted to say is watching these WBC games can be kind of interesting because you get to see guys in real competitive action, you know, against guys who maybe they're not major league pitchers, but they're competitive at that time. Like they're throwing gas, they're throwing all their stuff, breaking balls and 3-2 counts, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. They're trying to get you out. Pastano looked really good the other day, had a really quick inning for Team USA. Aviles and Cabrera have looked just there. They're a combined 0-5. They haven't done very much. I think they scored. Cabrera scored a run. Aviles drove a run in. Cabrera's coming back to camp because Venezuela was eliminated last night. So the days of Francisco Lindor at shortstop for a whole game are probably coming to a close. The one performance in the WBC that's really encouraging is Carlos Santana. He's gone 1-for-5 with 2 RBIs and a home run. I saw him the other night. He looked good catching. He looked smooth, you know, and athletic, which sometimes he does not look when he's catching. But he also has 4 walks. So, you know, 1-for-5 with 4 walks, that's a Carlos Santana line. Like, that's what you want to see. So that's encouraging. A funny WBC note is apparently one of the Indians' doctors, Kim Stearns, is helping out with the WBC. And Dr. Stearns' first patient was Bobby Valentine at the WBC. He tweaked his elbow throwing out the first pitch.
Oh, my goodness.
So Dr. Stearns recommended some ice for Bobby V. So I thought that was interesting because we talk about Bobby V a lot on this podcast. I did want to talk to Dr. Garrett a little bit about Michael Brantley.
Yeah, well, the big news about Michael Brantley is that he is going to continue sliding head first.
Right. 15 stitches.
15 stitches later, he slid head first and it was actually spiked in the left forearm.
Right.
Requiring some stitching. He's returning today.
Yes, he's supposed to DH today, Tito said, up near the top to get a couple at bats.
Yeah, so he must think he's doing all right, and he's going to keep at it.
Right, and Joe Smith is throwing again, right?
He is, yeah.
I think he gave up a 2-run home run in his first inning. It was against a left-hander, which he's always – last year he did well against left-handers, which made him much more valuable, but he has struggled against them in the past. But Terry Francona was all roses and – everything after the performance about how he's keeping the ball down and he looked good. So hopefully Joe Smith's over that oblique injury. And he's one of the few guys that we know is going to make this bullpen.
It's interesting talking about Michael Brantley and his head first slides, because you hear a lot of people in the baseball industry and a lot of former players who say there's no real benefit from sliding head first. I think it was Aaron Boone or someone the other day was talking about how he didn't like sliding head first because then the players coming down to tag you knew that they could tag you aggressively and that they could get their bodies down to try and block right. you. Whereas if you're sliding cleat first, they can't use their bodies because they don't want to get stuck with a cleat.
Right.
But then you see guys like Michael Brantley who are like, I'm a slide head first because that's what I've always done.
Right.
And that kind of transitions into our pop-up culture today, talking about Harvey Dorfman's book titled The Mental Game of Baseball.
What is losing? Losing is a disease. As contagious as polio.
In this book, if you've never read it, Harvey Dorfman, he was considered one of the most prominent figures in baseball for what he was able to contribute to teams, which was the psychological aspect of how baseball players perform. He won World Series rings as a consultant with the Oakland Athletics in 1989, as well as the Florida Marlins in 1997. Harvey Dorfman passed away, I believe, last year. That was a rough year for you guys, wasn't it?
Oh, why did you bring that up?
Yeah, so I think Harvey Dorfman, I believe he passed away last year.
Jose Mesa.
Great counsel.
He's part of the reason that you hear baseball players talk about all those stereotypical phrases that you hear when Derek Jeter comes out and says, there's nothing I can do about my ankle injury. I'm going to rehab it the best I can, and I'm going to control what I can control. That is all talk that Harvey Dorfman has developed, where when he would consult with teams, he would tell players that were getting frustrated, and he would talk to them about why they were getting frustrated and tell them, listen, there's nothing you can do to control this. Control what you can control and do the best that you can with your ability and what you can. And he really brought that to the forefront in baseball, where if you talk to people like Jose Bautista speaks the world of Harvey Dorfman, because when he was a struggling player with the Pirates before he got shipped off to Toronto for I don't even remember what player we traded Jose Bautista for.
Had him twice, though.
We had him twice. But when he got shipped to Toronto and he was having all these issues with his swing, he sat down and he talked to Harvey Dorfman, and he says he contributes a lot of his success to what Harvey Dorfman was able to tell him about how he needed to control. So I know as a baseball coach, a lot of the things that I tell players are things that have come right from that book. And when you read it, I've dog-eared pages on, you know, page after page after page of important information in there.
Shameful.
The I know book, it drives
the book
Bob
is
crazy.
Twice as thick as it should be. It's dog-eared to me.
It's dog-eared everywhere. But like when you read it and you think about how it applies to baseball, and then you hear those baseball players talk all the time, you can see how big of an influence he's had on the game.
And that's when you're coaching, you don't even realize some of the stuff you're saying is coming from that.
Exactly.
It's like coach speak now, mm-hmm. but you don't realize that it came from him.
Things that you just inherently would say, just that you would say as a coach, generally speaking, are things that he's gone and researched and investigated,
right.
and organized. And it's an amazing read. It's an easy read too. It's divided up into short chapters that look at the different mental aspects of baseball and how players should approach the game. I think it's kind of important to highlight this also because baseball seems to be shifting more towards a sabermetric, a more analytic look at the game. And it's always important to never forget that these are actual people.
Right.
They're actual people. They have feelings and they have emotions. And, you know, talking about like AJ Burnett and why does he benefit coming to Pittsburgh instead of New York? Well, maybe it's because he has that underlying skill set that doesn't play well in Yankee Stadium, but maybe it's because all of a sudden now everybody's not booing him and he doesn't feel like everybody hates him and he feels like he's more in control of what he can do. So
he's now loved.
Yeah, we love him. We embrace AJ Burnett. We love him and all of his tattoos and all of his zany antics.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, you don't, you know, because it's a team of people, that's the influence, I think, a lot of times on the manager. You know, a lot of people, you know, they look at professional sports teams like, what difference does a coach make? You know, these guys know how to play. It's like, well, that's a lot of what the manager brings. What kind of tone does he set in the clubhouse? How does he handle the players? You know, like Terry Francona, everything is praise, you know, and he can even tell you need to work on something
in a positive
comment, you know, but it's never cutting you down, you know, and that's how you get the reputation as a player's manager, because you know you're never going to be thrown under the bus. You know, it's always, well, the blah, 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 you know, but you look really good today.
Yeah.
He gave up a two-run homer, but man, he kept the ball down. It's throwing downhill. Everything was beautiful.
Which, and that's why, you know, you look at like Bobby Valentine, that was just
right.
an accident waiting to happen in Boston. Like he's, yeah. What makes you think that this explosive character is going to succeed in one of the most intense scrutinized media markets
yeah.
in the United States? So it's a really fantastic read. I would strongly recommend if you're a fan of baseball at all, pick up The Mental Game of Baseball by Harvey Dorfman. Well, let's transition into emails, tweets, and other things. What are we calling this?
Tweet mail.
Tweet mail.
Oh, boy. I don't know about this.
So if anyone out there has a better name, please tweet it to us or email us a better name for the segment because we're going with tweet mail until then. Our question today came from Joe Zatkowski. Joe, if I butchered your last name, I apologize. Send me the phonetic pronunciation of your name on Twitter if I goof that up. You can follow Joe at Lunchbox Joe on Twitter. And his question is, who has a better chance of making the Pirates roster, Brad Hopp or Brandon Inge? Now,
wow.
Yeah.
I forgot Brad
Hopp was on the roster, yeah.
See, here's the thing. Most people forgot Brad Hopp was a baseball player because last season, Brad Hopp, he signed a minor league contract Brad with Hopp. The Texas Rangers.
Sure,
and he was released before the season started, Brad Hopp was.
He was in Oakland too, wasn't he, for a little bit?
Brad Hopp was...
He's hopped around.
Well...
Oh!
Clever pun.
Yeah, I couldn't let that slip away.
Brad Hopp started out with Colorado, and...
those were his glory days.
Those were his glory days, and actually that's a big reason that a lot of people think he's in camp is because he's a player that has played with Clint Hurdle.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
So he started out in Colorado, and then after Colorado, he was with the Tampa Bay Rays in 2010. And in 2011, he was in San Diego. And last season was not in professional baseball in the major leagues. So Brad Hopp is coming into camp, hopefully refreshed with all of his extra time off.
Well, did he play like in Japan or did he just not play?
I
don't know.
You know, I can't find
was
that information.
Playing with Roger Clemens and Scott
Sugarland
Kazmir.
Skeeters.
Yeah, maybe it was with the Sugarland Skeeters.
Chiba Latte Mariners.
But... you know, going back to his glory years, his best years in Colorado, which a lot of people seem to think those numbers are inflated for whatever reason. He had a 29 home run year in 2007 with 116 runs driven in.
Yikes.
He had a slugging. He had a 539 slugging. So
it's zombie level slugging.
It really is. It's hard to, and it's hard to tell whether the skill set is underlying that's actually there, whether that's a product of Colorado. You know, you could look at the splits and delve into it a little more and come to your own conclusion. But for whatever reason, after he left Colorado, his numbers seem to tail off a bit. And he's in camp this season as a 34-year-old non-roster invitee. So
lottery ticket time.
That's a little bit of his history. Brandon Inge. Detroit, longtime
podcast favorite.
Favorite Brandon Inge. I've personally met Brandon Inge. Humble brag.
Not so humble.
Actually, not
name dropping.
Yeah, name dropping. Me and Brandon Inge are like BFFs.
Whoa.
No, we're not. I have a picture with him though. But he, you know, played his whole career with Detroit. Last season, I believe Detroit did they just cut him? They cut him in the middle of the season, didn't they? Outright released him in the middle of last season. And Oakland,
that was during their roster purge of like Inge and Rayburn and those like traditional Detroit guys.
Yeah. And Oakland, being the savvy organization that they are, decided to jump on the Brandon Inge bandwagon, picked him up, and he played exceptionally well for Oakland down the stretch.
Before he got hurt.
Yeah. Before he got hurt. So he finished with Oakland. He had 11 home runs in, was it 283 at bats? So, you know, he was productive for Oakland when he was out there.
So you haven't answered the question yet.
Well, and that's what I'm getting to. So looking at these two guys, if you just look at them based on their recent past level of performance, you would think Brandon Inge would be, you know, the easy answer to that question, which I really think he is. Not only has he not sat out a year of baseball within the last year, but because you looked at what he did with Oakland and that young roster that Oakland had, and he came in there and all of a sudden they're doing the Bernie lean and everyone's feeling really good about what's happening in Oakland. And he comes in with those 311 plate appearances and hits 11 home runs. And people in Oakland said he brought a great veteran presence to that clubhouse. And those are kind of those cliche things that you love to hear. Hey, he's bringing a great veteran presence. AJ Burnett, same thing.
Talking about Giambi?
yeah. So I would say out of the two that Brandon Inge probably is the easier answer for that. The only thing I will say that Brad Hopp has going for him is that he's played for Clint Hurdle before.
Sure. And of course, Brandon Inge has so many different possibilities
position
wise, you know, and that's a lot of, sometimes that can be the deciding factor, you know, how does that roster calculus kind of shake out, but he can play pretty much anywhere. So
yeah, and that position flexibility, absolutely, especially in the National League, really kind of helps out in holding that roster spot. So
I just remembered, you done with that?
Yeah.
This was a quote Terry Francona said about Ryan Rayburn. He has a swing that plays off the bench. Well, okay, so you might as well sew the name on the back of the jersey right now.
Get him in there.
You might as well get the stitching already started on that home jersey.
Speaking of quotes, did you see that, I think it was in the Plain Dealer, where the Dolan came out and said that one of the reasons why we spent so much money this offseason.
Because it was awful last year.
It was awful watching last year.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, he said, I guess that's the shock we needed.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's a shock you needed.
Either
the rest
that,
of us already knew.
Either that or 12,000 fans attending ball games watching the product that isn't performing well.
Well, and he said that, you know, ticket sales were way down. Season ticket renewals were way down. So he knew. Finally. So basically, Cleveland fans, if you think that no one heard you when you didn't come. No, they heard.
Note taken.
They did finally hear.
Well, thanks a lot for that tweet, Joe. We appreciate that. And keep the tweets, emails, everything coming so we can keep in contact with our fans. We really appreciate that. It gives us something to talk about as well. Well, we want to thank our listeners, as always, for tuning in. We want to thank Bob Finkbeiner, Jason Ruggiero, and our newest Tri-State staff member, Dr. Garrett Britton. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, that was great.
If you want to, you can check out our website at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter @tristatebb, and you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So, as always, this is Andy Burdick signing off for Jason, Bob, and Garrett, and we look forward to talking to you next week. Just one shot.